Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
My name is Carrie St. Louis, and you're listening to 11, the official theater podcast.
Hello and welcome to 11, the official theatre podcast that brings the biggest stars and creatives together in one place to discuss life in the arts. She's the Broadway leading lady that's making quite the name for herself with her standout vocals, fierce acting chops and hilarious comedy skills. Currently setting sail as Rose in the smash hit musical Titanic, she's bringing joy in its bucket loads while belting out some of the most instantly recognisable Celine Dion songs of all time, while also causing absolute chaos too. Improv, belting, grinder, the Dara Roth box office is that way. And no stranger to standing centre stage, she's also taken star turns in Wicked, Kinky Boots, Rock of Ages and many, many others. And soon she'll be taking on the blonde bombshell herself, as Elle Woods in Legally Blonde. So here, in her closing week in Titanic, we get all the gossip aboard the most infamous Celine Dion musical extravaganza of all time, including belting out the hits, embracing the madness, and trying harder than ever to keep it together on stage, even in the face of such lols. Plus, we talk performing for First Lady Michelle Obama, tackling a rather special British accent in Kinky Boots, and why comedy is just her thing. So get ready to laugh, as it is the stunning Carrie St. Louis, here now on this, the next episode of 11, the official theatre podcast. To ensure the safety of all involved in this episode of 11, Carrie and I connected with this conversation digitally, so please forgive any brief moments while we wait for the internet to catch up. Enjoy. Please help me welcome to this, the next episode of 11. She's the Broadway leading lady that's rocked out, visited the wizard, made shoes, and is now setting sail on the infamous Titanic, or should that be Titanic? Hello, Carrie St. Louis. How are you?
I'm so good. Thanks for having me.
I am so looking forward to this. And I should say before we start, because I feel like this is going to be lots of laughing and lots of being silly, that we've agreed to this for a long time because we have a wonderful mutual friend called Ben Rahala, who is, of course, on 11 recently and is absolutely slaying. And he's given me lots of inside gossip about you and lots of stuff to ask you, so strap in because I've got some questions. But
I'm so ready.
But before we talk about that, I want to just say that I had the pleasure of coming to New York in January and meeting you for the first time in person, and it was such a wonderful experience because you are in my favorite show in New York. I feel like I should genuinely work for the press team, so when it comes inevitably comes to London, I'm your guy because I've done nothing but bang on about Titanic. It is so good. As a Celine Dion fan, I went in going, I'm gonna hate this is going to be dreadful, my Queen Celine, how dare you do something so disgusting, and came out like, when are we going again? And it's actually impossible to get a ticket. I should say, people that listen to this and go, I want to come, book early, because we got literally the last two tickets on the back row and it was still an absolute serb. So firstly, for that experience, thank you. But in your own words, because it's definitely better coming from you, explain who you play and also explain the concept of Titanic, because people see the posters and they go, oh, it looks fun. But it is so much fun, but it's so freaking clever, right?
Yes. It's brilliant. And it is a very specific style of comedy. But yes, it's the movie we all know and love so much. But it's kind of a parody version of it, but brilliant parody, a la Book of Mormon, a la SNL. It's you know, some of the jokes are so stupid, but you can't help but laugh. It is full of pop culture references. Celine Dion is the narrator. She was on board the ship, and the whole score is all Celine Dion songs. And it's also sort of structured in the style of a Celine Dion concert. There are moments that nod to the iconic Celine Dion concert in Vegas at the Coliseum, and just her kooky craziness in general, which is just so lovable. It is, I feel like other Celine fans come it's a daunting task to even sort of try to replicate the Queen. And it really is not, we're not making fun of her. We're celebrating her and honoring her. And everyone from her team has come and seen it and has just been like, she would love this so much. This is such a wonderful thing. But I play Rose DeWitt Bucater, Jack and Rose, and it's a wild, unhinged, chaotic, insane Fantasia of a show. And I just feel like every scene, especially starting out at the beginning, we come out and it's, you know, musical theater and presentation. I can always look out at the audience and I'm like, they have no idea what's about to happen. It just unfolds and gets crazier and crazier and crazier. And nothing is off limits. It goes there in the same way that Book of Mormon goes there. But yes, it's written by Ty Blue, our director, Constantine Rizzulli, our Jack, and Marla Mandel, our Celine, and their brains together is just, it's glorious.
Nothing is off limits is such a perfect way to put it, because you go in expecting to laugh. But I think what I found most engaging about it is that it is respectful to Celine. It's really nice. But also I think what's clever about it, which perhaps other types of shows like this don't perhaps do successfully as this does, is that it's the isms of Celine fans, like "shall we go for it?" or like "how you doing, girlfriend?" which only us, you know, like God fearing Celine Dion loving people adore, but is just executed so perfectly in the show, where you sit there going, I love the fact that we're all saying, isn't Celine Dion one of the greatest people of all time?
Yeah.
But also, it's woven into this story that we all know.
And she's a perfect, narrator.
Oh my God.
Because there is nothing, she's just so kooky that like, it just leads to, it opens so many doors. And Marla, who plays Celine, is brilliant and does an improv section every night. And again, it just all works because within the parameters of Celine, as an entity, as a personality, there's just so much that you can do with that. And there's some deep cuts for real Celine fans. But also I found that it's so interesting. The show is entertaining for every type of person. Like I've had, you know, straight, gay, older, way younger. Like there's just some theater people, non-theater people. There are jokes in it. And I mean, there's just so many jokes. You almost can't get them all in the first go round, which people come back and they're like, oh, I caught so many more jokes. But we often, it's crazy because we're as a cast, we're very much passing the ball to each other. It's very much an ensemble piece. Everyone is intricate to the storytelling of it all. And it's very fun to, we almost have to pause for everybody's laughs all the time. It's just, there's so many jokes in there.
Is it harder for you, I guess, as an actor to deal with the icon status of the songs, the show, and particularly your character? Or is it, what I think might be the answer, is the fact that it's so comedy driven and you're so funny as a human. I imagine it really leads into your funny bone, but it is a big weight because if it's not funny, you're almost kind of slightly offensive. Like you have to get the balance right.
Yeah. I haven't really leaned too far into being like, oh gosh, it's Celine, it's Precious, it's Rose from Titanic. Because again, I did an interview recently where someone asked, you know, oh, how much do you maintain from the movie? And of course, I've watched and studied Kate Winslet and I love her in the movie, but it feels like a different thing. It's a different show. Same content, I guess, but I can get away with a lot more. And I think keeping the essence of Kate Winslet is what's important to me. But again, the Celine songs, they're all new arrangements of them and they're used in different ways. So I don't feel like I have to sound like, I certainly don't have to sound like Celine, but I also got lucky because Constantine is my best friend and he wrote it and he's my Jack. So the two of us together is just, every time we work together, this is now our third show that we've done together. We're like, there's something about us, we're lightning in a bottle, the two of us together. And so having him on stage to bounce my character off of is very much just kind of has helped form it into what it is. But yeah, I don't lean too far. I think ever since the Wicked days, I'm like, I can't spend time thinking about how it stacks up in everyone's idea of this character. Like that's kind of the Wicked curse, is like there's so many and everyone has such a special tie to that show. You can't please everyone. So I just bring as much of myself to it, to Rose, as possible and just have fun. At the end of the day, the show is so fun that if you take it too seriously, you lose all of the sparkle about it and what makes it so enjoyable for audiences.
And also what a joy to know that people that specifically come and see a show with these characters and this music and this creative team and these stars is that people are already on your side. People want to have fun. Like, and that's, I've had as a performer, you're like, yes, they're with us already.
Yes. And it's been great. Like as the show has gotten more and more, you know, popular and everyone's kind of word of mouth has been flying around New York City. It's funny because at the beginning, we were still sort of kind of convincing people of what this was. I mean, it is very a new type of musical in New York, I'd say. It's kind of the LA market was doing a bunch of these for a while, but this is kind of like the first time it's really breaking into New York. we would kind of win them, we always win them over. But now we come out and we can feel, there's a buzz. Like the second the Heart of the Ocean starts turning, people start cheering. And I know it's because there's repeat people that are excited to see it again, but also there's new people that have heard so much about it. So they know going in that they're going to have a good time. Yeah, it's really fun. It's really fun to watch it grow and be a part of it at this point.
Do you think anybody walks into the theater, sees the merchandise that this show sells and goes, oh, this is going to be a very serious evening at the theater? I mean, the word fucking
on Iceburn, bitch. Yeah. Celine fucking Dion. Well, I mean, sometimes we see like younger, like families and stuff. And we are also, we've now been running, you know, almost a whole year. So we're starting to get like tourists and stuff like that too, where I don't know if they know going in. And that's always a little interesting when you see like maybe a, there's an age range with it. Like it's definitely rated R, I would say, if it was a movie. Young kids will miss a lot of it. And it's, I think it's, you know, fun to watch the lights and the singing and all of that. But I think, yeah, around like 13 to 15 is where the parents would have to like use discretion and figure out what works for best for them. But sometimes you can see a parent being like, oh, we read the room wrong. Like we did not, this is not proper. And then you're sitting there with your kid. But I mean, the movie tackles those themes too. So yeah.
And there's no naked scene, thankfully. There's a version of it, but yes. You know, thankfully there's no bare boob, which you're like, okay, we're just having a laugh. You don't have to go too far.
Yeah, there's no Spring Awakening moment in it. Can you imagine? Oh my gosh.
Can you talk to me about some of the music? Because one of the great joys of this, you know, when you go see shows like this, sometimes you either get like no songs or loads of songs and you're in the camp of loads of songs because it's just like hit after hit after hit. Can you talk me through some of the songs that do feature? Because this is like Celine Dion greatest hits. I mean, to sing as a artiste, you're like, whoa, here we go.
I know. And I cannot believe they got the rights to everything, which is insane. Like, it's just crazy what we have in the show. Yes, it is daunting. She's a big sing is what I tell people, because I sing in pretty much every single song. I think there's one song, My Heart Will Go On, at the end with just Celine and the backup singers. That's really the only song I don't sing in. Everything else I'm in some way or another, just running around. But yeah, there's, oh gosh, what does it start with? There's I'm Alive, there's Tell Him, there's Beauty and the Beast, there's To Love You More, there's Because You Loved Me, My Heart Will Go On, of course. Oh my gosh, there's so many. You and I, If You Asked Me To, All By Myself, Seduces Me, I Surrender. Like, it is wild. And everyone is just singing their asses off. Like, I've had so many of my friends, you know, in this industry come, and they're all like, you guys, it's so funny and it's so stupid and clever and all that mixed in one, all that in a bag of chips, if you will. But also, you guys are singing down. Oh, River Deep Mountain High. Can't forget. Aviance is just, our iceberg is out of control. Every night I'm like, where, how, what is that? But also, my boyfriend is a muggle, as we say in the States. He does not do theater. He's not of the wizarding world. And it's just so funny when he has to describe what I do for a living. And it's like, oh, she sings Celine Dion, but she's playing Rose on the Titanic, but she's basically a clown, but basically... I just can't believe that this is my life. It's so fun.
Have you and the rest of the cast come up with a sort of one line sale of how to explain why it's called Titanic and what happens? Because I have encountered a similar thing of, oh, it sounds great. What's it about? But it's about Celine, but it's not. But it's about if she was alive, but she's like 180 years old, but just go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's Celine. It's the Titanic, a parody of the Titanic told through the eyes and songs of Celine Dion. It's SNL meets, like Book of Mormon, Celine. Yeah, because there's improv. I mean, there's just, it's everything.
The best way I described it to my friend was, I went, oh, look, it's just good shit. Go see it. And he was like, okay.
Good shit. We'll take that. That's going to be our new marketing campaign. When we come to the West End, it'll be, this is good shit.
This is good
period.
Shit.
be fair, I know a lot of people that would actually go see that. I know that the Mrs. Yeah. Doubtfire is coming here, and they put, I think it's Who's Your Granny or Who's Your Nanny on the poster. And I was like, that's funny. That would make me go see it. I was like, hello. Yeah.
I think before we even got reviews or something, they were going to have, you know, like Constantine's mom write a review and have that be or something. But now we've got some good reviews. It's been going well.
You mentioned him there, but can you talk to me about what it's like going to work, not just with your friend, but like Constantine is awesomely talented, so funny, has a very interesting stage presence in that he's very commanding of a moment where you instantly are drawn to him. But I imagine mm-hmm. as a creative, that's exciting. You're like, I've got a great leading man, but also he's quite naughty. Like it must be kind of hard sometimes to be like, this is not the moment to do this.
He's so naughty. He is, but like our dynamic again, like, I don't know. We're like a weird brother, sister, but like in love, like it's just such an interesting relationship that we have, but we are the exact same people on stage as we are off stage. So there is a whole backstage show going on where we get off the stage in the 2 seconds that we're not like running around and we're like, you know, like in the back, just, it never ends. It's like a full-time extravaganza into his brain. So yeah, it keeps things fun. It keeps things light, but I've definitely had moments where I've been like, not now, babe, not now. And we're both kind of like, We even got the note the other day from our director. He was like, you guys are too obsessed with each other. It's like, not, you guys don't know each other in the show. Like we gotta go back. And we were like, oh, cool. Okay. Too obsessed with each other. Note taken. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
And you know, the reel that they put out when Ari did the tone at the BAFTAs, you know, when they did the thing and they put it to him dancing. I think I watched about 20 times because it's so funny.
Oh my God. The Angela Bassett did the thing, took over. I was tagged in 2 separate ones, like a Wicked one and the Titanic one in one day. I was like, wow, this feels like my brand. This feels right.
I do think that the social media team that work for your show are also genius in the fact that they pick such good clips. I mean, the Jennifer Coolidge one is so funny.
Yes. They're geniuses. They've also got great content to work with, but constantly, I'm like, when we filmed B-roll, and we did this like music video of My Heart Will Go On. And at one point they just pulled out a recorder and we're like, okay, Marla, play this recorder into the camera. And it's just genius. It's like, oh yeah, duh, of course. It's wild. Again, to my poor muggle boyfriend who's like, what is your schedule like today? And I'm like, oh, well, we have a press event with a corgi. And then he's like, oh, what? I'm like, we're gonna put the Heart of the Ocean on a corgi. He's a famous corgi in New York City. Go to theater school, they said. It'll never be boring. That's the main thing. And my life will literally never be boring.
I feel like at the start of this conversation, we need to explain, please. I've actually not sod this. I'm not explaining. Just go see the show because it's, I feel like your listeners go, what the fucking hell are they talking about? This just sounds so stupid.
I think it'll be in London soon enough.
I think so. Yeah. And you know, sort of feels silly to say, but like the Celine Dion love is so apparent here. I mean, she obviously did Hyde Park famously summer just before COVID. I mean, like that's a crazy venue to do outside. I mean, it was sold out. I mean, I think you'd struggle to go anywhere in the world and not find diehard Celine Dion fans. But I think also in a serious way, like because it is so respectful and celebratory of her material and her work. And like you say, her team said she would love it and it's done in good faith. I think there's a lot of excitement for it and curiosity. And I'm intrigued to see how it translates. I think we're gonna love it.
Yeah. I think some of the jokes would probably change too, just for the different sensibility. But yeah, I mean, and it's constantly evolving, which is they call it like an amoeba, because the pop culture references, like as things happen, the White Lotus finale, or you know, when she was left off the list of greatest singers on Rolling Stone, they will put that into the show. So it keeps it fresh and fun. And yeah, her main producer of her Vegas shows, who's been with her for years, he was so, so sweet, came into the dressing room after seeing the show and was fully crying, like full tears, being like, she would love this. This is so wonderful. And then he was like, how do you guys do this 8 times a week? She doesn't even do it 8 times a week. The thing, he was so blown away by the singing of it all, which is so funny because like you work with iconic Celine Dion, but fingers crossed she's able to come soon enough and see it herself.
Well, I was going to say, have you even toyed with the idea in your brain about what that may be like?
Oh my God. Well, I mean, she's not doing so well right now. I don't think she's traveling currently, although she's getting better is what we've heard. And so we are sending all of our love to Celine Dion.
Definitely.
But I don't even know what would happen. Marla would pass away. I no, she would not be able to know. She does not ever want to know if anyone's in the audience. I like knowing personally.
That was going to be my question, was, would you want to know, to be fair though, how Celine Dion never just wears like tracksuits and a dark hat. She's going to come with like a big number. Do you know what I mean? So you're going to be like, there's Celine Dion. Shit. What do we do?
Yeah. I know. Well, RuPaul came and I know RuPaul came and she was in the back beanie mask. The whole, none of us knew because again, Marla can't know. But now I get to say for the rest of my life, bucket list, I have lip synced for my life in front of RuPaul. Did not think that would ever happen, but that's my new two truths and a lie. I'm going to be like, I've lip synced for it. And everyone's going to be like, that's clearly not true, but surprise.
Has Patti LuPone been to see it yet?
No.
What do you think that's going to be like? Hey, Patti.
I don't know. I actually have no idea.
I don't want to spoil it too much for people that haven't seen it, but Patti LuPone features more than you would realize.
Yes, Patti LuPone is a member of the cast. Yes, for sure. Because of course, why not? You know, all that in a bag of chips, all that in a bag of Patti LuPone.
Good shit, right?
Yep, good shit. Good. That's all you need.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
It's so much fun and it really is just like joy. Serious shows have their place. And I think what was the beauty about coming to see this and the way in which I saw the shows was that I saw such a fun thing that put me in such a good place that I felt like I could go see other things, but then actually miss the joy and wanted to come back to see something else. And I think that's the genius of the show and what you all do. And the fact that you can tell it's actually fun for the people on stage. Comedy's hard to do when people are being miserable. So
yes,
you know,
very true. Yes. It's a team sport.
For you, is it, I say it's like therapy, don't want to go that deep, but is it like, you know, I know at 7 o'clock, I'm going to be okay.
You know, we've talked about this a lot. You always leave the show feeling better than you did coming in, no matter what. Like, even if you're having a bad day, you get in there and everyone's just, it's a cast of literal clowns and idiots. And we're all just doing this thing. And, you know, sometimes before we go on stage, I'm like, all right, guys, like, let's tell this beautiful story and share it, you know, and everyone's like, oh my God, because that's just not, you know, the point of it. But it really is. It's been such a great way for me personally as an actor to come back after the pandemic and after all this. You know, it's a grueling schedule. 8 shows a week is just, it's so hard to have a real life, have a normal life. So to be able to go to a show that you have so much fun doing, it's a short show. I'm home by 9:30. It's great. Like it's quick and dirty. We go in, I don't ever leave the stage. I leave my phone downstairs. It is like for 2 hours, that is all that I am doing. And it is all of my energy, but it's so fun. And just being in that room with the audiences, like losing their mind. I mean, sometimes pretty much every show, there's always at least one person that I see that is clearly short circuiting and is like, the look that they have on their face is disbelief that like someone somehow managed to go inside their brain and write the perfect musical for them. Like it is truly, and people after are like, how did you see this is everything I've ever wanted in a musical, you know? And that's really fun to watch because like we do it for them. We do it for those people who are like, wow, I needed this show. And especially in a time when everything is dramatic and it's hard. Life's hard. It's hard out there. So to come in and just laugh for 2 hours is really what I think. It's great medicine for people. And a lot of times people have been telling me, when people come to visit, I'm like, oh, what other shows have you been seeing? And lately everyone's like, oh, well, we saw the Matinee of Parade earlier. And I'm like, Okay, so we really needed this. We really needed this tonight. High highs, low lows, but
I think I was actually that person that came into the and watched it and was like, this sort of is what goes on in my brain. Like, this is,
yeah.
I genuinely, I mean, apart from doing a terrible Celine Dion impression, I also love her so much, where I imagine what would this concept and this story look like if she was actually part of it. So when whatever the dialogue is at the start of the show, where it's like, oh, that would make you 180 years old. You can have been there, or could I? It's like, that's just like,
and you are confused because or do they? Like, she is just like, okay. Yeah. Totally. Also, like the weirdest Celine Dion angel on your shoulder that you envision talking you through life.
But also the famous scene, the dance where you're spinning around and then she gets so drunk she can't remember. So she just decides to make it up. Like, genius plot. Just so then you're just like, literally nobody gives a fuck about the story. We're just going to do what is in their head. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, she goes so crazy with the improv too. Sometimes I'm like, this ruins the whole premise of the show, technically, if you lean too far in. But yeah, it's so funny. And when I had seen it, because I, you know, I joined for the Daryl Roth, and when I first saw it in New York, I'd seen kind of every iteration because of Connie. And when I saw it in New York, I just remember sitting there going, oh, they have made all the right decisions. Like, there's so many ways this could have gone. And it's just very clever. It's very smart. Everything is intentional. The style is intentional. It is camp, but it just rides that line, which, like you said, is hard to do. Comedy at that level is definitely a skill in a team sport. So it's really fun.
Does it ever go too far? Is there ever a point where the laughter just can't stop?
We've had a couple, like, it's the Saturday night at 9 p.m. shows that are wild. They're so fun, though. Oh, my God. I have never felt more like a rock star in my life. The other, was it last weekend or the weekend before? Standing ovations after every song. Like, it was a rock concert. We were all like... This is the best, you know. I don't think it ever really goes too far. I think we are good at like keeping it moving, just because every joke is so funny that you have to kind of, you sit long enough. But again, it's a timing thing. You got to keep it moving at the end of the day too. And that's why I keep harping on it being a team sport, because if you have a selfish actor in the bunch, they're going to sit there and try and take all the moments. But a lot of the moments are setups for a joke. And if you're trying to have that every moment to yourself, it just won't work. I feel like a lot of Rose specifically too is like, I set up a lot of jokes, sort of like passing the ball, because I'm the most straight man of the bunch, which is insane. But like, I am the one that's like the most story heavy, as opposed to like, you know, kind of parody jokey. And they said when I started out that they wanted me to keep it pretty real within, obviously it's ludicrous what we're doing, but real-ish, so that the story is maintained. And so a lot of what I do is passing the ball.
Also, you have this,
and everyone just shits on me.
You do have to get sort of be the joke. And one of the great jokes in the show is the relationship between Rose and her mother, which is a character that I love so much. And sort of connected to the quick moving of the show is that the mum's character works, because it's like, oh, another day being a young, beautiful, skinny model. Off we go. Next line. But you're laughing at three jokes back going, this is so, like, at one point, I remember I got so hot. My friend was like, what are you doing? I was like, I need to take my fleece and jumper off, because I'm actually going to hyperventilate. It was, do you know what I mean? You're like, oh my God, stop. Like, just do a shit badly worded scene for 5 minutes so I can calm down.
I know, there's no break, there's no breathers. You're like, oh my god, and that's why it moves so fast. I mean, Russell, who plays my mother, is truly brilliant stand-up, brilliant like comic, his first musical, and he's just, he is so funny, and the way, just every minute he's so committed to it, which I think is because backstage, loveliest human being on the planet, truly the sweetest human being. And I just get on stage and it's like, I will make eye contact with him in any scene, anytime. And he is like disgusted by me, truly disgusted. We get backstage, everyone else is roasting me for filth. And he's like, how are you? How was your day? You know, like so kind. So I love it. I mean, I come from a family where roasting is my love language. That is how we express love. So to me, it is so funny. It's so hard for me not to break. I break every single night. I'm hopeless. I'm like, fire me. I can't.
Are you the sort of person that does find funny moments on stage? Are they easy for you to create? For example, obviously referencing the posters behind you, but like Wicked and Kinky Boots were such specific characters where it was like, this is a funny moment. This is a funny person. They must laugh at this, or it doesn't sort of work. Do you find as an artist that you go, I like this challenge, or is actually sort of written comedy quite hard to make funny?
They're different. Yeah, I feel like this is, Titanic feels easier because there's a lot more freedom in it and they want you to find your own, you know. I think with Wicked, Wicked is definitely a more structured situation. But I learned a lot about comedy through Wicked, through it being such a specific recipe. When I was touring with Wicked, every city had a different sensibility, different jokes were funny, you know, just based on the political climate in that specific, you know, it's just always different. And so I learned a lot about recreating the comedy in different demographics almost. Kinky Boots is just, I don't know, I've been so lucky. I play these like really well-written roles. Like I've gotten very lucky to have good writing behind me. That always helps things be funnier. Trusting the material is really huge. And trusting myself, like bringing myself to it is so essential. Instead of trying to, again, like the pressure, trying to be a carbon copy of Kristen Chenoweth or a carbon copy of Kate Winslet or a carbon copy of Annalee Ashford. I've just always known that that's not going to work for me. Then I don't feel like I'm being myself. So I'm weird to begin with. I'm a weird, quirky girl to begin with. So I'm like, let me just say it how I would say it and kind of go from there and then establish the parameters around if I've gone too far. I always tell students, I'm a coach, and I tell my students that one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given is it's way better to go in, especially in the room, in the audition room or rehearsal room, and go too far than it is to pull back. Because they can always pull you back. It's a lot harder to be like, oh, can we get more out of her? Strong and Wrong St. Louis, choices are free and I make them all the time. And I have been pulled back many a time. It's been like, oh yeah, you went too far. We're gonna rein it in there. But at the end of the day, it's fun. Like it should be fun. And if you're, like you said, like a miserable comic, you can smell that, you can sense that. And as a result, nothing is funny.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Was Kinky Boots a project that surprised you at just how huge the fandom was? Because it still has this legacy in London of people that, if they were to say, yeah, we're going to go again, like it similarly that did in New York, the audience was huge because it really was, I guess, the first time since Priscilla that really took off in London, that we'd really had a, quote unquote, my least favorite word, but like a mainstream version of drag queens on stage that was good, that wasn't based on improv. It was based on a structured story that was trying to lift up queer focused stories as opposed to always being based around tragedy or death or anything else. And it broke the mold, and it was sort of, I mean, the names, you know, Cindy Harvey and Jerry, but like it really was like the best of the best. So was that a project that surprised you?
I mean, yes and no. It was the same sort of thing here. And I remember seeing Annalee, seeing the original cast. My boyfriend like got me tickets, and it was, you know, I couldn't believe he had scored tickets. It was at the time that it was just impossible to get in there. And I went in for it a bunch of times, actually. That was like, I would say Kinky Boots was the role that I've like gone in. I went in for the most before I like got it. And every time it was just sort of not the right time for me. And the last time I went in, I remember thinking they clearly don't want me because I feel like I could play this part in my sleep. I feel like I am Lauren. And of course, that's the moment, you know, then it was like the second I took all the pressure off myself and was like, well, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. That's when it happened. But I got to close it here on Broadway, which was just such, and again, timing is everything. That was the reason, you know, why it took so long. But it was such a cool, I mean, I look back at my time in Kinky Boots, and truly the best company, the best people. Everyone in that building loved the show, loved what we did. It was just a joyful place to be. And I think it's because the show is so great and the fans loved it so much. And it is such a great message. And it just felt good. Everything about it felt good. There was not a rotten egg in the bunch. That trickles down, you know, that's Jerry, that's DB, that's all, you know, Cindy, everybody that was involved was very involved. Daryl Roth, our producer, was, she would just be in the wings waiting, watching the show sometimes. Like, it was just a love that was very deep for that show and that production. But yeah, our closing night, wild. I mean, the whole theater was full of everyone that had ever been a part of it. The pressure of that was a little scary because I was like, oh God, like everyone's, you know, at least thinking about, well, what if that was me? But it was like a rock concert. I mean, everybody's like solo moments were just, people were freaking out. Cause also a lot of the original cast members stayed the whole run, like six years. Yeah. And then we had this huge after party and Cyndi Lauper DJed. And I just, it was one of those moments in time that I will never, I just kept pinching myself, like looking around being like, this is your actual life. Like, this is real. This is happening.
Also, during their life, could say that they've actually performed and sung for the lady that wrote and performed Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Like, what the fuck?
It's insane. Insane. I just came up on my memories the other day, a picture of the two of us, and I just was like, oh yeah, casual. Cyndi Lauper was my boss. I remember one night we actually went out for our drinks after she came to the show and then was kind of like hanging out. And I had a glass of red wine in my hand and we were in like a conversation and she goes, oh, you know, you drink red wine, you know, her little Queen's accent. I'm not going to even try to do it. And she goes, I can't drink that. My acid reflux, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I almost just chucked it out the window. I was like, yeah, me neither. Yeah. Oh my God. I would never be caught dead with red wine. You know, called my parents on the way home. Was like, I was just casually shooting the shit with Cyndi Lauper about acid reflux and wine, you know, normal Thursday.
And also the British accent, a very specific British accent, which is the city next to mine, but I've lived in London for quite a while. So it's kind of not too dissimilar to this one. But when I sort of get angry and shout, I tend to find that the Northampton twangs come out.
It's a little less posh.
Just a touch. That's living in London. But the Northampton accent, it's hard. It's a really tricky dialect. Did you have words and ways to get into that mindset? Because it's, you know, you can be Australian quite quickly and it's definitely not that.
We had a dialect coach for sure to help us with it. But also, yeah, I think just by doing it and like listen, you know, once you've, also you say the same lines every single, it's not, there's not like an improv where like Marla's in the Celine Dion accent the whole time. But like, I pretty much had it down to its pattern and its rhythm and its sort of fluctuation. But yeah, it was fun. I loved it. I would like, the problem was I would like carry it with me out. Like I would leave and be like, all right, you know, time to pack up. And I'm like, what am I doing? I don't speak like that. Oh God. I'm actually surprised I haven't started mimicking your accent. Cause when I talk to people with an accent, I start to do it. And it's really embarrassing and awkward because I'm like, what am I doing? That's not right.
I think it's a compliment. I like it. But I also can do like two American accents, which is either like Deep South or New York. There's no, like in the middle of the country clearly doesn't exist. I'm like, okay, cool. So I could basically be in like Guys and Dolls or like Oklahoma, right? But don't bother about the rest.
I mean, that's true. I mean, that's kind of true of like Northampton and the posh British, you know, like Keira Knightley or Pride and Prejudice, you're not going to be like, well, you know, so it's a little bit different than that, but it felt more authentic to me and to the character as well. And they weirdly didn't want you, not weirdly, but singing so strongly in the accent just because it's hard to understand. So the singing was always a little different than, you know, it was like, women up and naked, that you can't really do all of that. So they'd be like, you just kind of tap on the accent when you're singing. Well, that was interesting, just to make it more palatable for like tourist audiences to understand it.
Been really interesting actually seeing the sort of the global takeover of Six and seeing how the accents actually sort of really do manipulate the storyline, but also they sort of don't. It's this weird juxtaposition of like, I remember seeing a really strong Scottish accent as one of the leads going, I absolutely love this, but also, wow, it does change stuff. And I realized people don't really sing in their accent. It's not a thing.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, I mean, Mark Evans, who's in our Cal, he is British and he speaks and sings in the British accent. He just made Cal British, which we love. We're like, yeah, that fits. That tracks.
Has he always been British, or was the person before him not?
No, the person before him was not. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you do it with always with Mark, or did you ever do it with a person before?
I did it with John Riddle.
So when that
original, yeah,
changes?
I did it with him.
Is that? Are you like, oh, no, it's not weird?
No, I think Mark just came in and they were like, wait, this works. We like this. Just keep it. And I know Mark from life. Like, Mark and I are dear friends. His husband was actually my Drew in Rock of Ages, my first ever contract. So he's basically my brother. It feels like it's just Mark. Stage.
Yeah. Just one other quick thing that I wanted to mention to you, and we sort of referenced Wicked a second ago, but you had, apart from the varying different iterations of Wicked that you got the joy of being part of, you did get to spend some time with somebody who had been here in the West End, and that's Miss Jenny DeNoyer, who is of course legendary of
also Miss Rachel Tucker.
Miss Rachel Tucker, of course, yeah. Who's did Wicked for a couple of weeks, I think, or maybe even about 5 years, because she's literally ridiculous. I mean,
like, built for it.
I was going to ask you a question of 2 hours. What was it like working with Jenny to start with, and of course with Rachel? And secondly, you also did get to perform, and I think it was with Jenny, for a certain First Lady. Is that right?
Yes.
No pressure.
Oh my God. The coolest moment of my life to date. Jenny is, I mean, wonderful. Jenny is truly the sweetest, kindest person. Again, when they're at odds in the beginning, it is so weird because it is just so unlike how she is in life. She is just like a delicate, gentle love bomb. Delicate, gentle love bomb.
Okay,
put it on her bio. Yeah. She's like hailed by Carrie St. Louis as. But she's so, so kind and so wonderful. And she had been doing it for so long. And that I was her Glinda when she took over as full-time Elphaba on Broadway, which was many years in the making. And it was wonderful watching her work. And at the time, her daughter, 9 months old, and she's playing Elphaba 8 times a week. It is just mind-boggling to me, that as a feat in and of itself. And she never lost her cool. She was just so consistent. I learned so much about work ethic from watching her. I was just blown away by her and her temperament and like everything about it, because that's a high stress situation or a high pressure job. And she was just lovely. And yeah, we got to perform. So I feel like everyone during their time in Wicked as the witches, they get to do something cool, because Wicked is just cool in general, but there's just so many. I think the witches just recently did NPR Tiny Desk with Stephen Schwartz, which is so neat. But I got lucky enough that when I was the witch, so First Lady Michelle Obama held a, while the UN was in session, she, which theater was it? I have the program right here. Such a nerd. I was at the Jacobs Theater. And it was all of the first ladies from all over the world while the UN was in session. And it was for her Let Girls Learn campaign. So it was all female songs from musicals. So Sarah Bareilles performed, Cynthia Erivo performed, beautiful Carole King. And we got to sing For Good. And it was so cool. I was so nervous. I have this picture. It's really funny because they had us, you know, downstairs. We each got to take pictures with her. And as we're walking up, it's like, they would introduce them and they'd be like, introducing the First Lady from the Republic of Chad, like introducing the First Lady of Zimbabwe. And then she goes, introducing the Witches of Oz. And we're just like, hey. And we took this picture where I practiced so many times. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna put my hand on my, you know, hip, and I'm gonna smile. I am geeking out so hard. My face is literally like mouth open. And all I could think to say to her was just, she was like, oh my gosh, I love Wicked. And I go, I love you. That's all I could think to say. Cool, Carrie. Strong and wrong, St. Louis strikes again. But she was, it was like the loveliest, most amazing experience ever.
That's like literally bucket list for everybody in the world, and nobody really gets to do that. So to be like, I mean, you see like Joe Biden's in the UK at the minute, like the amount of security to even go like 10 miles near them. So to be that close. And I saw a conversation recently where Sophia Okonedo was doing Raising in the Sun on Broadway, mm-hmm. and the Obamas, both of them came to see it, and they came backstage, I believe, during the interval to meet them so they could run off at the end. And there's a little cell phone video of them coming in, and Barack, the president, shakes the hand, and then literally Sophie just turns around and goes, oh, and like mouth open, just looks like she's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
it's like they're not real people. They're so infamous.
That's the crazy thing, though. It's like, you know, you feel like you meet celebrities, whatever, all the time, and you're like, oh, they're just a normal person. They're not normal people. Like, it is even just being walking up to her again, like, I was speechless. There is a, it's like an elevated level of, I can't even explain it. It's just like you are operating on such a high frequency as a human. And it's like so kind. And you just think about all the things that they've done. But yeah, it was really wild for me. I was like, oh, whoa. And I mean, obviously I look up to her. She's incredible as a human being. So yeah, it's funny because I have the picture and students come, you know, for lessons and stuff, and they'll be singing, and then all of a sudden they'll be like, I'm sorry, is that a Michelle Obama? And I'm like, yeah, that's Michelle Obama. I had to frame that one. So
I love that you're talking about Celine Dion, Cyndi Lauper, Michelle Obama. Like, come on. This is all for me, yeah. As you say, strong and wrong. I was like, literally, yeah. It's the best way to be.
These are just my gaggle of gals, yeah. You know. Just going to have them over. Not for red wine, though. Not for red wine.
No red wine. Because okay. Cyndi couldn't do it because, you know, the voice.
Yeah, but the voice. We got to protect the gift. Yeah.
This has been such a joy, and I've got one very quick final question for you, because I know that I don't want to make you talk too much, because you've got lots of screaming Celine Dion songs to do, those couple that you do each night. But you've spoken about these legends, like, as much as we joke, like, people that really are icons of this industry, to get to sing the Celine Dion music, to be involved in a project that it really is so unbelievably successful. The shows behind you, the Kinky Boots and the Wickeds, that are legacy shows and shows that talk about lifting other people up, but that have given you as an artist so much. And you joke about sometimes the time's not right, but when it is, it is. When you think about the varying successes that you've had with the likes of Rock of Ages on TV, on big screen, and of course on stage, when you think about the first time you wanted to do this, when you think about the industry that you wanted to be a part of, that you found a place for yourself, what do you think that person back then would have made of the varying different things that we've discussed today, and the fact that being loud and being fun, but most importantly being yourself, has led you to all of this great success?
I mean, I would never believe it in a million years. I still don't believe it. I still have moments where I walk into my apartment and, you know, I've got these show posters because it's my studio where I work too. But I sometimes just take it in and I'm like, I can't believe it. It doesn't feel real sometimes. But yeah, I think it's just, I'm very lucky, extremely, extremely lucky. But also I think if you love what you do, like, really throw yourself into it. And I've just kind of always been the type of person that just goes all in. I'm an all in person. And, you know, you're going to sometimes make mistakes and you're going to fail and you're going to get rejected and these things are going to happen. But as long as you kind of keep your inner compass and your North Star of like, this is just what I love to do, and I'm going to bring myself to it and keep a good attitude, stay kind, stay joyful. And when you start to feel like you're losing that, because it is, it's your work as well. It's an industry, it's a career. You have to, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows all the time. A lot of time it's a lot of hard work too. It's a lot of hard work and stamina. But it's like knowing yourself enough to go, okay, I need to move on to something else now, or I need to leap into another unknown. And it may not look clear, but knowing yourself and knowing your intuition really to guide you is like, it's everything. It's really everything. But also keeping an open mind, like, anything is possible, truly. I can't even believe, like, looking back, it's crazy. Even when I do podcasts and talking about these things, I'm like, oh yeah, I did meet Michelle Obama. That is, oh yeah. Thank you for reminding me of all these stories. And it really does feel, I feel very lucky. Very, very, very lucky.
Oh, this has been such a joy. Thank you so much for your time. Oh. And most importantly, congratulations on Titanic. It is such a joy. And I wish there was like DVDs, videos, bootlegs to give me a fix until the point at which I can actually come back and see it. And please, if anyone is listening and anyone from the show is thinking, London ? It's a big yes. Honestly, the time and the space is there. If you want, I'll even hand out flyers. How about that? I'm so
okay, great. Oh my God. You're going to be out there. Sold. You're out there in the Jack outfit, just like on the street. Or Celine. I mean, honestly, strong and wrong.
I mean,
get you a wig, a sparkly dress, ready to go.
A wig. Lol, bless you. I've definitely already got a wig. Don't worry.
You're like, you just pull it out. Well, I love it.
All I say to my friends is, shall we go for it? And they're like, yes. But that's just become everyday dialect now. It's just like, shall we go for it? And they're like, yes.
Shall we go for it? Yeah. Shall we go for it, girlfriends? I know. Constant. It's nonstop. It's so funny. My brain too, it's like, at this rate, I go into any like store or anything. It's like either Rock of Ages is playing, like, you know, Don't Stop Believing or something. And I'm like, whoa, PTSD. Or it's, you know, Cruel Intentions was all 90s pop hit. So I'll be like, whoa, that's from Cruel Intentions. And now all of Celine's repertoire, I'm screwed forevermore. I'm like, just going to hear all the shows and feel like, oh, I got to warm up. It's time. It's starting.
So, Your poor brain.
Yeah, I know. But thank you for having me. And this was so fun. I can't wait to come visit you in London. Yeah. I've only been for one day ever in my life.
What?
Crazy. It's crazy.
I need to change that.
Traveled so much, but for some reason, London is sort of, I've dodged around it. So I've got to come.
Could come have, do a
have a London moment. Come down London. I know. We'll just put that out there.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been such a joy. Exactly. And I'm so sorry it went so over, but I really, really appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah. I'll see you soon.
You've been listening to 11, the official theatre podcast. Find out more about 11 at 11podcast.com or via the Broadway Podcast Network.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.